States v. Jinglin. Mr. Flanagan.
Good afternoon. Jeffrey Flanagan, appearing on behalf of the appellant, William A. Jinglin. This cause is before the court on a direct appeal from a criminal case. It was a denial of a motion to suppress, and subsequently in that case, Mr. Jinglin pled guilty to the offense, was sentenced. He did reserve the right to appeal the denial of the motion to suppress, and that's why we're here today. The issues on appeal, Your Honors, are whether the entry into the appellant's residence by his sons, one of which was a police officer, violated his Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable search and seizures, and whether any subsequent searches, items seized, were fruit of the poisonous tree.
Where is Lewiston, Illinois, in relation to Peoria?
It's approximately 35 miles, trying to think of the direction, maybe southeast. It's about 35-40 miles from
That's
Peoria.
That's a little town.
It's a very little town, yes.
Peoria is a big town.
Peoria is bigger than Lewiston, yeah. Peoria is approximately, I'd say, 125,000 people.
And there was no one involved in the Peoria Police Department who authorized or had any control over what the brothers did, particularly Jared.
Correct. Jared was the only he did not advise any superiors or any other persons in the Peoria Police Department regarding his actions.
So if he worked for the Peoria public school system, there wouldn't be any argument that you could make here today.
I agree. Correct. I think a lot of what the argument in the brief is and what's going back and forth as far as what Appelli is saying is under the law there are a couple there are no cases that are specifically on point because it's an unusual situation.
Yeah, very bizarre case.
Exactly. And for example, under Shadid, it sets forth certain standards, but I don't think Shadid was designed for a situation where the officer is, in fact, also the private person.
Does an Illinois police officer, as a matter of state law, retain any of his police powers when he is outside the jurisdiction that employs him?
I believe they do. I don't know if that was my understanding from the record was that Mr. Jinglin, Jared Jinglin, the police officer, testified that he does not really have any authority, however, based on the rules and regulations of the Peoria Police Department, even if he's off duty, I believe he still has to carry his badge and identification and those types of things. Jurisdictionally, though, I think unless there were exigent circumstances, I don't believe he would have had the right to make an arrest, for example, in Lewiston, which is why when he was provided, when he observed the things he observed with the information he had, he didn't take it to Peoria. He took it to the Lewiston Police Department. On that note, I don't necessarily think, however, that jurisdictional issues should in any way infringe upon Mr. Jinglin's Fourth Amendment rights. For example, if that were the scenario and you were to say that, well, someone's not as protected in their home just because the police officer that's in their home is from another jurisdiction, that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. With respect to Jared Jinglin's actions and why I believe he was acting, in fact, in his capacity as a police officer, as you go through the history of this, it was he who originally noticed the article in the Journal Star. It was he who took the initiative to go home and check the website. It was he who then initially contacted his brothers, who were not police officers. The three of them met.
But all those things are real consistent with being a son who is concerned that his father is involved in serious criminal activity that could result in his death or injury or death to others.
I think originally, yes, consistent, but I think where it becomes inconsistent is where at that point it would seem to me the appropriate remedy would be to go to the Lewiston police and explain what has taken place. Jared Jinglin took it upon himself to arm himself with a gun, a bulletproof vest, his badge, his identification, and take his brothers to the house, enter the house, apparently under the guise of looking for their father. However, once they yelled and knew that Dad wasn't there, that didn't end. They didn't leave and go to the Lewiston Police Department. They continued what I would suggest was an investigation by Jared Jinglin. He went through the house looking for further evidence that his father was involved in this so that he could provide that to the authorities. I'd like to reserve a little time for rebuttal.
All right, Mr. Flanagan. Mr. Chesley?
May it please the court, counsel. The government has offered four bases for sustaining the district court's denial of the motion to suppress. Any one alone is sufficient. To answer Judge Mannion's question, the police officers do retain authority throughout the state.
That is Judge Ripple.
I mean Judge Ripple, I'm sorry.
Both from Indiana, but this is Judge Ripple.
They're both from South Bend.
I had Judge Mannion.
Easy to confuse them.
I had Judge Mannion yesterday. Sorry. They retain authority to arrest somebody who commits a felony in their presence. That's the authority they retain. And what we have here is a situation where the district judge had the opportunity to see all three of the sons testify. And she thought that was very important to listen to them and see them testify to make her factual determinations. Now, with respect to the issue concerning whether it's a private citizen or acting in governmental authority, this court really hasn't decided the standard, whether that's clear air or de novo. But under either standard, based on her factual findings, and they're listed in our brief, I would be glad to go through them if the court wanted, but she made factual findings that it was Garrett, the oldest brother, who was really the one who was leading this activity. He was the one that decided to go to Lewiston. He was the one that actually got the brothers together. Jared, the police officer, asked if he could go along with. It was Garrett who made the decisions, led the discussions, made the decision that they should go there and needed to find their father and stop him immediately.
The troubling fact here, if there is one, is the bulletproof vest and all that sort of stuff that Jared had.
The testimony by Jared was, and the other brothers too, is that they were concerned about their father's mental health. They knew that he had firearms. Obviously, he was a fairly older gentleman when he was committing these armed bank robberies. He was 64 years old, and they knew that he had weapons. And so Jared testified that he was concerned that his father may try and shoot himself and possibly shoot other people in the process. So he wore the bulletproof vest. He had that vest on because he was coming from a second job where he worked at. Not his job as a Peoria police officer, but as a second job where he wore the bulletproof vest, had his uniform on in that job. Went home, he took off that uniform. If he was there for police action, he could have kept the uniform on, but he didn't do that. And it was Garrett who decided to forcibly take their father in. In addition, all these sons had consent from their parents to be in the house at any time, whether their parents were there or not. They could essentially come and go as they pleased. This is the house they grew up in. They permitted to go anywhere in the house, so they all could consent to each other's being in the house. And also the independent source doctrine and inevitable discovery would apply unless the court has any other questions. One additional point I did want to make. Judge Scott heard all the testimony about the bulletproof vest, the gun, the badge. Now, he's required to carry his gun and his badge with him, but those were all concealed when he went there. She noted that those were the strongest evidence of governmental involvement in this, but in considering all the facts, as she was required to do, she found that they were insufficient to overcome all those other facts, and her factual determinations are not clearly erroneous. We would ask you to affirm the conviction.
And thank you, Mr. Chesley. Mr. Flanagan?
Thank you. briefly, I would just ask to address two issues that counsel brought up. With respect to the consent issue, I have trouble in granting that much weight to brothers who or parties who don't actually live in the residence being having the ability to give consent to the search. What transpired was the brothers went in. This wasn't a scenario where Jared actually sat down with them outside and said, hey, can I go in the house? They by agreement, entered this premises. And the consent, these brothers did not reside there. They hadn't resided there in a long time. And I think consent to enter a residence can be somewhat limited in certain circumstances. For example, it would be similar to the general consent for me to walk into Walmart. I can go into Walmart. I've got consent to walk into Walmart. But that doesn't mean I can't do things in Walmart that would violate the law. For example, steal something. I don't have consent to walk into Walmart and steal something. A general consent to come into the residence does not imply that the consent goes so far as to allow police activity in the residence. With respect to the issue of the bulletproof vest and the concealment of the weaponry, I would suggest to the panel that what has been described is basically an undercover officer. The fact that an officer is performing his duties while these things are concealed, the bulletproof vest, the gun, the badge, and isn't specifically in his blue uniform and his attire, in no way deprecates the fact that he is, in fact, a police officer. And I would suggest with respect to the concealment of that it does not go that far. Unless the court has any other questions?
Apparently not.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chesley. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.